The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours.
When you partner with Axon, you immediately gain access to a full range of products and solutions designed to meet the complex needs of today's grower. We carry all major brands and sizes of tires and wheels. We specialize in large diameter wheels for large equipment. We have one of the largest OEM replacement wheel inventories in North America. Known for extreme flotation setups, duals, and triples, we have wheels for all makes and models of tractors, sprayers, combines, and grain carts. If we don't have the wheel in stock, we'll custom build, sandblast, and paint in-house. There isn't a more vast inventory in North America dedicated to helping dealers move more iron. With facilities on the West Coast and in the heart of the Midwest, leverage our 230,000 square feet of indoor inventory to solve any problem a grower may have. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. You'll find us here, Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. I've got a special guest this time around, Doug Johnson from Moody's, and a little different topic than we talk about normally. Doug got introduced to me by Alan Hoskins, and Doug is an expert in lab-raised meat and kind of how that is functionally working inside of ag. So, Doug, appreciate you coming on, man. Excuse my ignorance on this topic, but this is something I know about, but I don't know about. So I'm very, very excited to have this conversation with you and learn a little more about this topic.
Casey, really excited to be here. Thanks for asking me, number one. And you are not alone, Casey, when it comes to this whole lab-raised meat technology and movement, if you will. There is a lot of confusion out there on what it is. So let me give a little bit of my background on why. Why is this important? So, Casey, our farm, northeast of Rasta, dates back to 1892. And we have two grandkids that live in the same farmhouse their great-great-great-grandfather lived in. So there's a heritage, and I want to make sure that we do everything we can to pass this on to the next generation's lab-raised meat. So when you look at technology in general. Everything that's hitting the farm, you have farm technology, yields, genetics. I used to really think about, carbon capture and storage, methane capture, selling carbon credits, environmental currency. I'm not looking at that anymore because I know a lot of people are focused on that. Now what I'm looking at are other ag headwinds and disruptors, things like AI. And that's not artificial insemination. That's artificial intelligence.
Right.
AI. What is the difference? What's AI and Gen AI? I had to Google that. I had to look it up. And then I heard in January, you may have seen this, Elon Musk took a computer chip. And he cut a guy's skull open, put the computer chip and attached it to these brain neurons. This patient can now run a mouse without touching the mouse. He can think it, and it moves around on screen. It's crazy where the technology is going.
That is nuts, yeah.
I'm not going to be one of the volunteers for Leo.
I would be Gen 3 or 4 before I jump into something like that, yeah.
Yep. So here's the question. Why is all this technology coming at us? Well, part of it is finding help. Getting help on the farm. Technology is taking over manual labor. You see, when I do these presentations across North America, the question I ask the groups is, do you believe we have a worker shortage? Is it hard to find help?
Well, I mean, for the help wanted signs all over town and the amount of farmers I know that are looking for labor, it sure seems like there must be a shortage out there somewhere.
Let me tell you, that's 99.99% of every group answer, yes, there's a worker shortage. And I say, time out. I don't believe we have a worker shortage. We have a work ethic shortage. We have people that could work that don't want to work. And that's where we have to rely on more technology. So here's the next thing. Technology, this lab reasoning, I want to clear up a few questions on it. Lab reasoning, neat. We've probably heard about it. This is not plant-based meat. It's not the impossible order. It's not made of soybeans and beet juice and blood. Plant-based meat is cellular agriculture. Here's what they're trying to do. They, in concept, scientists that are non-farmers in cities have stainless steel bags. They take a syringe and they stick a hog, and they get stem cells, and they squirt it in a petri dish, and they add things to that petri dish to make stem cells grow more meat. Here's what they're trying to do. They are trying to raise meat, beef, pork, chicken, duck, lamb, eggs, milk. They're trying to salmon. They're trying growing livestock on the farm by growing livestock from stem cells. Here's their why. Everybody has a why. Why would you want to do that? Their claim is growing meat in a stainless steel vat, stem cells, uses 99% less land. Well, that makes sense. We don't have all these cattle feedlots, right?
Sure. Yeah.
They claim, and it's not there yet, that growing meat in a vat will use 96% less water. Think of a dairy. How much water? Think of a broiler barn. How much water does that consume? They say instead of growing livestock, if you grow the stem cells, it will use ultimately 96% less water. Casey, they say it will use 80%. It will emit 80% fewer greenhouse gas emissions, and it will give you 100% of the nutritional value that comes from beef, pork, chicken, duck, lamb, all that, because it's real meat. It is not fake meat. It is stem cells from livestock growing without the livestock. It's real. So their storyline is, we can grow meat without livestock using 99% less land, 96% less water, 80% fewer greenhouse gas emissions, 100% of the nutritional value. How they do it I'm going to paraphrase. I'm not going to give all the science behind it. That's boring. They just stainless steel vats. They take stem cells. They put it in a petri dish. They add things like amino acids, fatty acids, sugar, salts, vitamins, things to make, to feed these cells, to make the cells replicate and grow. They put it in a cultivator tank, cultivate it, so those cells grow, and it forms sheaths. It doesn't form a pork chop. It doesn't form a steak. It forms a cookie sheet, if you think about it like that. And then you have to 3D print it into a shape or form it into a shape. This is important you remember that for later. So you can make sausages, cutlets, things like that.
So you're gonna put a 3D printer together for my ribeye steak.
So I'm going to tell you why I think part of that is going to happen and part of it is not. And remember the ribeye.
Right.
So lab-raised meat, how do they do it? Everything has its cells, right? What they're doing is, if you've heard of the word CRISPR, regularly, interspace, short, tolerant repeats, they're taking these genes and they're editing the genes. They're pulling out the bad and they're putting in the good. You know how long it takes to improve the genetic herd on the farm? Generations. What they are saying is, why do we wait? Why don't we go and start slicing and dicing and do it right in the petri dish? We can do it immediately. There's no immune system, Casey. This is me. On the farm, livestock has immune systems. Sure. When you're in a petri dish, there is no immune system on that. Their claim is, when you buy chicken in the store, there's salmonella. Their claim is, we can grow lab-raised meat, chicken, without salmonella. The problem is there's no immunity, and contaminants could get into this lab-raised meat, and they have to monitor it. Okay?
Well, yeah, because I'm, yeah, okay. That's when you brought up the immunity thing, that just kind of, I mean, there's nothing there to fight that off, right? So a cow's out there, and he's limping around or whatever, you know, sick or whatever. You can see that cow. You can separate that cow from the herd and doctor it as you need to, and do what you need to, and you can go through the genetic process, right? If that cow happens to die off, then those genetics don't get passed along and those kind of things. But you can monitor those things and see what happened where. If you do it that other way, there's no – I mean, how do they know if it's got any – whatever. It could have anything in there. And then how do they monitor that?
They have to test that. They have to constantly test. The meat, what does it have and all? Here's another thing they're adding in. So the stem cells have to grow, right? They have something. So some of the companies are starting with fetal bovine serum. And some of the companies add cocktails to it. If it's a patented product, they don't necessarily disclose everything they're adding into this concoction that you're using to grow the meat. That's the thing that we have to look at. And I don't know if you've heard of the term immortalized cell. Have you heard of
the immortalized cell? No, I haven't heard that. Yep.
So about a year ago, year and a half ago, there were some articles on the internet that said lab-raised meat is using cancer cells to grow lab-raised meat because they can't get these cells to grow quick enough. So they started looking at, well, how come when you get cancer in the body, cancer cells explode quickly? Is there something we can use from cancer cells to put in the lab-raised meat to make them grow quickly? So when you fact check, see, I know that sounds scary, right? Like, how is this a good thing for us? So when you fact check this, this is what we learn. There is immortalized cells, cells that grow forever. They just keep growing. Immortalized cells. Lab-raised meat wants to use immortalized cells to grow so they don't have to start over with the syringe getting stem cells from hog over and over. Once they have their stem cell bank, they just keep it and they keep growing, growing, growing. Cancer cells. This is the fine line. All cancer cells contain immortalized cells. All cancer is immortalized cells. But not all immortalized cells are cancers. Now I want you to think about that. They're going to use immortalized cells to grow lab-raised meat. All cancer is immortalized. Not all immortalized is cancer. They're having to control. Is they're growing
that. Yeah. So can you give me an example of what a non-cancerous immortalized...
So I'm not sure I can get a good answer. It's just going to be a cell that is cancer-free that starts to replicate.
I got you.
Cells, they divide, and then they divide, and then they divide, and they keep going. But if cancer is in there, then they're going to have to throw that lot away. They're going to have to straight that out. They're going to have to, and we're going to have to trust they did something to identify and remedy.
Yeah. That sounds like a lot of risk, but.
Well, and here's why they're looking at it. Here's why they're studying. Lab-raised meat cannot grow quick enough, Casey. Right now, you can produce meat from the farm quicker than you can grow lab-raised meat in a lab. So they're looking at, how do we get this to scale? So there's a pilot facility that runs about 400,000 pounds of meat through a year. It has a capability of 400,000 pounds, but it can only produce 50,000 pounds. It can't get growing quick enough. A modern pork producer, you look at a pork confinement, hog confinement, it can produce 3.5 million pounds of pork through it in a year. 70,000 square foot unit. 3.5 million pounds. But lab-raised meat can only produce 50,000 pounds in that same facility. 3.5 million to 50,000 pounds. They got to find a way to make lab-raised meat scale quicker. Here's the other thing. This lab-raised meat, remember what I said at the beginning, we emit 80% fewer greenhouse gas emissions. They're not that today. It's a heavier footprint on our environment than our current farming practices is. They are leaving a bigger footprint today than what we are in farming. They have to figure out, if they're going to do this, they have to figure out how to improve that. Face points. Back in 2013, roughly, they created the first lab-raised meatball. $330,000 for a one-pound meatball.
Sounds like a whirl. Sounds like a good
night out. And we think we have meatflation today.
No kidding, right?
Yeah. We do not have meatflation back in 2013. We had. Yeah. So what they're doing now, they're claiming we can take that same meatball, that hamburger, and we can produce it for around $11 for a hamburger.
1 pound of hamburger?
They claim they can take that and move that down to around $11. They are getting that price tag. But it's like everything else in technology. The first frontier, Casey, was the size of your wall. And nobody can afford it. And now everybody has a computer. It's the phone.
1,000 times more powerful.
Okay, you ready for this? July 31st, 2023. Why is that being important? Washington, D.C., Chili Chicano, a restaurant in Washington, D.C., started serving lab-raised chicken. Lab-raised chicken. 3.5 ounces, $70.
For chicken?
It's chicken.
Wow.
So now you say, hey, I want to try this. I want to get on the bandwagon. I want to try lab-raised meat. You call them. You will be put on a waiting list until the year 2028.
Wow. It's a 5-year wait or 4-year waiting list.
4-year wait list, 2028. Wow. And this is where I get nervous. We think about lab-raised meat competing against traditional agriculture, our farm. Lab-raised meat is being heavily invested in by big names, GBS South Africa, Tyson, Venture. There are ag companies investing in the experiment of growing lab-raised meat, Casey, because they want to hedge their bet. If this happens, we are prepared. There's actually two new startup companies in Illinois that are building facilities to grow lab-raised meat in Illinois. If you Google companies growing lab-raised meat in the U.S., you'll be shocked. how many there are. Oh, and here's the fun fact. We look at lab-raised meat. It's not just meat. It's milk. There are companies globally that are working on producing lab-raised milk. They will grow milk in a vat that came from the dairy cow, but they no longer need the dairy cow. Once they get that milk, the starter, then they take that and they feed it to have the milk grow more milk. They don't need dairies after that. And their logo, their value prop to consumers, why would you buy lab-raised milk instead of milk from the dairy? Our logo is we are green and clean for the environment. They say dairies are bad, emitting methane, using water. You say, and they say our lab-raised milk doesn't do that. Now, they don't have it perfected yet. And here's the fun fact. If you look at the Webster Dictionary, Merriam-Webster Dictionary, and say, what is the definition of milk? Number one is what you expect. Milk is from an animal, a mammary gland. Okay, that's milk. Well, me too. Milk is produced from seeds or fruits that is similar to cow's milk.
So they're saying like almond milk is milk? Like that's
all. Almond milk is milk.
It's the same difference is what they're saying?
Same difference. So now, Casey, you know the dairy industry probably regrets this, allowing them to label almond milk milk. It should have been almond juice. You know that.
Yeah.
Right. And yes, there are lawsuits and the dairy industry is trying to correct that. And Casey, how many years has this been on market, almond milk? 2 decades? And consumers already perceive almond milk must be milk because it says milk. They're not questioning the word milk. So.
Yeah.
What could lab-raised meat, this is the fun, scary part. If lab-raised meat becomes a thing, what would they market? Remember your T-bone steak or your ribeye you said earlier? I don't ever see lab-raised meat doing ribeyes, T-bone steaks, pork chops, things that have tendons and structure. What I see lab-raised meat working towards is squishy stuff. Hamburger, chicken nuggets. Things that don't have a shape that you can shape however you want it. Milk, you don't have to worry about 3D printing it. Where would they start, Kisiri? Where would they potentially start to market lab-raised meat, the squishy stuff?
So I just Googled this right here just so I could kind of have a frame of reference here because I've never even thought about this till now. But so last year in the United States, 2023, the United States produced 1.5 billion pounds of meat, and that's, you know, poultry, pork, beef. I'll be running them all through there, right? So you're telling me right now that there's a lab that's making 50,000 pounds of lab-raised meat?
It doesn't quite make that much. They have that potential. They can grow to that. They're so new right now, Casey. Yeah. But anyway, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, just to offset, put in perspective, right? So, I need to Google this to figure out, but I don't know what percentage of nut milk is, you know, eating up the milk marketplace, but the actual cow milk, dairy milk side of that. But it's not half, right? It's not like it's half, but it's every year it gets a little more.
Yes, it is.
So now we're looking at this to where you're going to go. I can understand why. Like the JBSs and the Tysons and those kind of people are thinking like, hey, this might be something we can look at because now we can set up our own factories and we can make our own whatever and we can push that out without having to be, you know, vertically integrated, right? You know, we've got everything. We start to finish, we're going out the door with whatever we need to have. And then the grower is not someone we have to necessarily lean on so much and go through that open marketplace that we used to. You're also giving something out there where at least there is a governmental agency that's going through and checking these facilities and checking the refined product and those kind of things on the live animal side of it and going through it. Everything you've just laid out to me so far, where I have to worry about if there's going to be cancer in my hamburger or not is something that it's eye opening. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things where you sit back and you think about on the surface, what you're talking about makes sense, right? I mean, I don't know that I'd ever want to enjoy lab raised anything, but that being said, I mean, from the surface perspective, Yeah, I mean, it may, there's some benefits and those kind of things, but when you start peeling back the layers of the onion, those benefits kind of wear off pretty quick.
So, Casey, this is day one. This, I hear this all the time. That's a great comment. This is day one of a science experiment. Day one. It is not affordable. We're not profitable. There have been companies that have invested because they can't see the future to it. It is not scalable, but there is still enough interest in it that says, if we can get this perfected, we know we can emit 80% less greenhouse gas emissions. We can eliminate slaughter of livestock. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Customers don't want to know their chicken didn't come in a freezer bag in Costco. They don't want to know the backstory. And so what we in agriculture understand, many in non-ag do not understand. We have an emotional heritage in ag. We understand how producers take care of the farm and the livestock and all that's degree. And we understand why we do what we do. Consumers in New York City, Atlanta, Los Angeles, never been on a farm. They never question where their food comes from. They never question.
Comes from the grocery store.
They're literally about 3 weeks ago, a guy that I was talking to in Washington, D.C., he works in Congress. He's a lobbyist there. But he said, Doug, I heard you present. And until I heard you present, I never once questioned almond milk was not real milk. It's the word milk in a box, and I just didn't even think about it, that it's not real milk. I assumed it was milk. And we, TC, have to do more education in our ag industry to non-ag. We do a very good job educating each other, but we need to now do a better job, a faster, quicker job educating to non-ag. Look at this. Italy banned the growth of lab-raised meat. Too many unknowns. It goes against the heritage of farming. Texas proposed a bill banning inappropriate labeling. If this lab raised meat thing is going to happen, you better put a sticker on it that says it didn't come from the farm. Right. Florida proposing a bill that says we want to prevent growing lab raised meat. And there's all kinds, Mark Offer out of Missouri, congressman. And all these different groups are talking about, if we're going to invest in growing lab raised meat, that's one thing. But then we better put fair labeling on it.
Yeah.
Say, this did not come from the farm. And Casey, we are close to knowing, I'm going to say within the next 2 years, we will know, is lab raised meat a thing or was it a fad? And if they were this close, what I ask of everybody is advocate, educate. Why do we do what we do on the farm? It's very important to educate others.
I can tell you that if a chicken breast at a restaurant is going to cost $70, it's going to be a fad.
It'll be a fad.
Yeah. It's going to be a thing. Yeah, you know, go ahead.
They're not going to keep it $70.
Oh, no.
They're
sure. They'll figure out a way to get it done. Yeah.
Scalable, yeah. Affordable. And there was an article that said it was a shocking high percentage. Just, I'm going to make this up now. 35%, 40% of people that went to buy chicken at a grocery store went home and found out it wasn't real chicken. It was an alternative chicken, plant based or whatever, some alternative chicken, and the label didn't appropriately tell them what they bought. They made a mistake when they bought it.
You know, we do this whole milk thing, you know, that producing milk like you're talking about, where you don't have to have a cow to do it, is whatever. That's mind blowing. But anytime that we start thinking about anytime I start thinking about, you know, almond milk versus regular cow, like the idea of that's never crossed my mind. That, hey, this is real milk, right? My wife puts almond milk in her coffee and those kind of things sometimes. I've tried to drink almond milk and it's not good. I don't like it. I don't like the flavor, but. That scene from Meet the Fockers, where Greg's trying to, like, he's making up the story where he was on the farm and he's milking this cat, you know, and those kind of things. And Robert De Niro says, you know, I got tits, Greg, why don't you come milk me? I always think about that. I think that's like the perfect thing for almond milk, you know, for the for the Dairy Association to come out and talk about is just play that and then show an almond. Like where do you milk this at? Where are the teeth?
Yeah, where you, yeah. So Casey, what the moral of this whole story is, marketing wins.
Yeah, it does.
Marketing wins. And I'm going to say you need agriculture to take a more traditional conservative marketing approach, because we assume consumers understand the fundamentals of agriculture.
Yeah.
And I think that's that. I don't think we should do that.
Yeah. Because they don't. I mean, if you can go, I'm a hunter, right? So I go out and I shoot pheasants. It's my favorite thing to go on, right? And I had someone tell me one time, like, why don't you just go to the grocery store and buy those instead of going hunting? I'm like, well, okay, great. So I go do that. But it's the same difference, right? Yeah. I mean, somebody somewhere is raising a pheasant and, you know, they're doing the same thing I'm doing, maybe not with a shotgun, but they're doing the same thing that I'm doing, you know, and it's coming. It's no different. I mean, there's no difference in that. And the idea of that conversation was, you understand that someone had to kill that pheasant in order to make that get here. And they hold, somebody raised it and killed it. And you know, now it's in the grocery store. It was totally foreign to the person I was talking to about that.
And that's where this whole lab raised meat concept says, Casey, you don't have to worry about that. There's no harm in animals. So they want you to open the gates and the hog confinements, let the hogs run free. Well, you know what that means. That means we have feral hogs. That's a really bad idea, right?
Go to Texas and see how much they like feral hogs. it's not a very pleasant sight to see what damage they can do to a field and just overnight. I mean, they can root things up pretty quick. So it's a... This is a good discussion, man. I'm glad I had you on. I learned something today that I didn't even think about, man. I'm kind of one of those people that I just assume that you know what I know, type of thing. And because you know, it's just, I guess, not that I grew up on a farm or anything like that, but just logically, milk comes from a cow, not from a nut, right?
Yeah.
And meat doesn't come from the grocery store; it comes from a ranch someplace or a feedlot somewhere, and it makes its way through the chain and it gets to the grocery store. I mean, those are just how that functionally works. And I can see where, I don't want to say uneducated because that's not the right term, but it, people that just aren't familiar with how this works. I can see why this would be something that would be on the table.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. If you don't question your food source, who is the most trusted group in the United States, a poll came out, is farmers ranchers.
Yeah.
People trust farmers ranchers. What they don't like is the livestock is treated very, very well through its life, but all livestock has one really bad day, right?
Right.
And they don't want to know their livestock had that bad day.
Yeah.
But what's an alternative to it that eliminates that? Yeah. So I'm not saying this is going to work. I'm saying we're probably going to learn a whole bunch in the next 2 years. Will it work? If it does work, then we got to have fair and appropriate labeling if it works. And if it works, what does that do to our livestock industry? If it starts to build momentum and we have squishy foods and milks and all that, hamburgers, pastas, everything that you feed in the school system, in theory, could be lab-raised meat, in theory.
Yeah.
Lab-raised milk. So it's something we need to watch. And that's what I like to do, is go out here and say, have we thought about this? And that's why I really appreciate being on today.
Well, Doug, this has been a good conversation, man. And you made me think about some stuff that I'm going to go Google here when we get done doing this. So, Doug, if folks want to reach out to you and get more information about what it is you're doing, what's the best place to do that?
Call my cell phone, 402-639-4271.
Awesome. Well, Doug, I appreciate you being on the podcast, man, and I appreciate you, kind of looping you in through Alan here, and you posted my podcast back on the backside there with stuff that you're doing with him. So really appreciate that, man. I look forward to talking to you again.
Awesome, Casey. Thank you very much.
Right on. I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Go to LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. Check out the video version of this on the YouTube channel, which is the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel. And you can find us on TikTok and Snapchat at Moving Iron Podcast as well. Got a new website up at MovingIronLLC.com. Go check that out there for everything Moving Iron related. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Doug Johnson. Salute some iron, folks.
The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data. It's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep-dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. Find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Time and time again, through the years you'll find us here.